The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be with you. It's been a long time since I've been hosting this program. Everything's changed around me. Your host, Stephen Fleury, has taken on quite a load. He's, as you know, done just most of the programming over the last few months. He's also a teacher here at the college and has a lot of other speaking opportunities. So it's always nice to be able to share the program with him from time to time. As I mentioned, the new studio is just really beautiful here. We've drawn attention to that, as you can see the background here. But we also upgraded our control room. And I'd like to just really commend the guys that worked on that. The technology is, I think, better for us. We have new cameras. We have a video switcher. Mr. Benjamin Tower worked with Bailey Crawford on the technical installation. Parker Campbell and I think another student also kind of worked on just setting up some of the cameras. And all of that was really directed and led by Dwight Falk and by Brad McDonald. They're really effective at driving projects like this forward. So it's great to see the whole team involved in working on the programming here. As Mr. Fleury said, there's a lot of monitors and cameras, so if you see me looking around, it just takes a little bit to get used to all of that. Well, thank you for tuning in this morning. My name is Andrew Locher, and I'll be your guest host today. And as we typically do, we have quite a few different subjects to get into this morning. There's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on within the Philadelphia Church of God, who sponsors programming here on KPCG. I wanted to first discuss some of those events that take place within the work and probably our most visible effort in getting our message out to the world through the Key of David program. We have some changes coming up with the television stations that we use to broadcast the program. And so we'll discuss that a little bit to prepare you so you don't miss any episodes of the Key of David. The second segment that we'll get into focuses around Matthew chapter 24, verses 7 and 8. It says there, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquake in different places. All these are the beginning of sorrows." This is just a sign, or there's a lot of signs to be on the lookout for. And in fact, what's pertinent to even what we'll talk about here today, Jesus Christ started by warning the disciples to be on the lookout for deception. And you'll see how that deception even factors into some of these other conditions that Christ said would all lead up to the return of, to his return. And when we see these things start to happen, he said it's just a sign. It's just the beginning of sorrows. Not too long ago, Mr. Stephen Fleury talked about this subject that we'll get into. Really, I think there's a profound Key of David program that we taped back in 2017. And Mr. Fleury talked about Satan's great deception and how that is associated with the climate change debate. What is so dangerous about climate change? Why is that such a threat to humans? Is it the flooding, the increasing temperatures, or is there something much more sinister at play? We'll discuss the dangers, and also we'll use some data from those very agencies that are promoting this scare tactic theory about the world around us. We'll use some of their own data to debunk some of the irrational hype that surrounds climate change. We'll also, again, quote from that Key of David program, a very classic message to expose what the real danger is. And then if there's time remaining, we will get into just a very short Bible study today about God's holy day plan. But first, I want to talk about the Key of David program. We taped, I think it was our 902nd episode last week. And so Mr. Fleury continues to develop and present these different episodes. They date back all the way to 1993. And that's quite an accomplishment as we approach 1,000 unique episodes. It'll take a few more years to get there at our current pace. But the programming has never been stronger. It's really had tremendous response. But what we're finding now is a change to the stations that we're using to carry the Key of David program. And I just wanted to explain a little bit of that to you. It is the greatest category of expense, any line item in the church's budget, and it always has been since the beginning, is the amount of money we pay to broadcast the Key of David television program. Anywhere from 12 to 15% of the annual budget is spent on airtime purchases exclusively. It's just to buy the airtime. We do have very low production costs for the Key of David. There are other support expenses. Of course, we have to answer the phone calls in our call center. That is greatly assisted by volunteers in the church that take calls all through the week at their homes on our behalf. We also have mail processing fees, packaging and mailing the literature, and of course, then the cost of producing all the literature, the Trumpet magazine and such. I was pretty surprised looking back over the years. I would estimate the church has spent more than $65 million buying airtime in the last 20 plus years. And during that time, we've had quite an evolution, you could say, of how people use their televisions, how they acquire their news and entertainment, not only with television and cable, but now also streaming through the internet. And as you know, the church uses all of those mediums, and not just one particular landing place per medium, but we use all the different types of platforms to make that warning message available. With broadcast, we have tended to look for a national cable station that would basically reach every cable household in the country. And then we supplement that with some over-the-air stations in the bigger markets, and sometimes in the markets that aren't so big. And we've really relied on those national cable networks in the past. Over the, I just wanted to say we also, with the over-the-air stations, we also stream via our websites. We use YouTube. I checked the stats yesterday. I think we have close to 70,000 different subscribers. And YouTube says that we have just about 15.6 million views. We didn't get started on YouTube too terribly long ago, and so those numbers are really quite impressive. We're also on Facebook, as you know. We have streaming on our website. We have a lot of different opportunities or avenues for people to come to watch the program. We take thousands of calls a year. In fact, last year we probably had over 100,000 phone calls and web requests for the literature that's offered on the Key of David program. And so you see the scope of this work is really huge. And it is a matter of trying to manage the different ways of getting the message out there to as many people as we can. We have stations all over the world. We're always looking to expand our coverage. We do have some changes, though, coming up, as I mentioned. First of all, we canceled our contract with WGN, just mainly because of lack of response. WGN was one of the first stations we contracted with back in 1993. And they were a real workhorse for us, but as the national cables expanded, WGN switched hands a number of times, and they changed their programming. And really, right now, it's just not that effective for us. And so WGN will air, I believe, this weekend, and it's our final weekend airing on that network. So if you're watching there, you need to make a change. Another change for us is ION Network. ION Network, they're changing their programming, and so they gave us notice that they needed to take our slot back and use that for other programming of their choice. So at the end of March, just in another couple weeks, we'll be done with ION. I think we've been with ION for about 13 years. It's been a great station for us. It's unique. It's a network that probably has brought in a couple 100,000 responses. Our program aired on Friday morning. And I think it was a really good time as people were getting ready for work. But one of the ways we used ION was to just kind of measure how much response we'd get each weekend, and that would help us staff up or draw down a little bit in the call center for the number of operators that we use. And so we're losing that thermometer, you could say, that Friday morning time. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact that has. ION was great because they gave us a presence in the top, say, 50, 60 markets. But again, there too, I think we kind of saturated that audience over the past 13 years. We found that our response, while not necessarily declining, wasn't increasing, and we'd expect some increase there. So both ION and WGN are going to be done with the Key of David program within a few weeks, or we'll be done with them, however you want to look at it. And so we're replacing that coverage with over-the-air stations in the different markets. Keep an eye on the TV log on our website. You can go to thekeyofdavid.com. It just redirects to the Trumpet, but it gives you the station listing there. We also print the station listing in the Trumpet magazine. So there's plenty of ways for you to go look up what city you're in and make sure that you're not missing any programming. Of course, you can watch our programs on YouTube. You can stream them from our own website. The Key of David is always available to you. One of the things I also wanted to mention is we're testing some overnight runs with the Key of David program. Very late night airings, they're very inexpensive. Some of the markets that we're testing appear to have quite a few people watching TV at that late hour. So we'll see how that works out for us. The audience would be different. I'm not sure how many people are up at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. when some of these programs air, but obviously different jobs require being up that late, or sometimes people can't sleep. And so we'll see how these new overnight stations work out for us. And we're not just going exclusively to that, of course. And I'm just kind of curious to see why this is all happening now. And again, I think we'll see a much greater response, to be honest with you. I think we'll have more stations, and we'll just have really hopefully a great increase in the number of people that are responding. I think one of the other benefits, at least one that Mr. Gerald Flory brought up, was also the fact that as our message gets stronger, if we're relying on one network in particular to reach, you know, across the U.S. or across the world, that type of thing, if that station has a disagreement with our content, which has happened in the past, then we're somewhat at risk of losing access to people. And so as God expands maybe the number of different stations we have, perhaps that will provide us a little more control. Well, one final statement as we wrap up this first segment, I wanted to talk about what I think is going to be a great opportunity for us. We're taking the Key of David program with Gerald Flory onto I-24 News. That's an Israeli-based news station or network. They have studios in New York, I think Los Angeles, over in Paris, and down in Tel Aviv. And the network is it's an English channel. It's available on all the households throughout Israel on basic cable. So it should give us access to exactly the audience we're looking for. There are about 20 million other potential viewers around the world. We're anxious to see how this does. I-24 News does some good news gathering. They have a very professional-looking website. They're reputable. We've checked in Israel. So it could be just an amazing open door for the work. We, of course, have Watch Jerusalem and the work that Mr. Brent Nachtigall does in association with his podcast, which you can listen to on KPCG, the KPCG website. Brent lives over in Israel, and he's pretty excited about this new station opportunity on I-24. So I think that's all we'll cover at this point. I would say that, again, I'd encourage you to use our websites, encourage you to keep up with all the developments in the church. Sometimes we can announce these things to you. Sometimes we're not able to. We have another website, pcg.church. That's less newsy, more content about what's taking place within the Philadelphia Church of God. That's a great website to go visit for some Christian living subjects, some of our music, a lot of different things are available there. But again, we hit a lot of news about the work on that website. Of course, you can subscribe to the Trumpet Brief or just go back to thetrumpet.com. We do our best to keep you up to date with everything that we're doing. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about a program. I've already alluded to it. It was taped in December 2017 by Gerald Flory, and it really is an amazing Key of David program. The title of the program is The Most Deadly Climate Change Deception. And there, Mr. Flory revealed the real concern about changes in the weather, changes in the climate. And what's interesting, obviously these weather impacts or the climate impacts affect the entire world, but the impact on the Western nations of end time Israel in particular, it's quite interesting to see how it seems that those weather upsets tend to affect the nations of Israel in particular. Again, it's not exclusive. I understand that. And what's great about that Key of David program is the threat that we hear so much about with climate change is really not what you would think. It's not what the scientists or the politicians promote as the great danger that's facing us. And honestly, the consequences of their deception, the politician, the scientist, that's only going to exacerbate the problems that we face. And it's really quite a story. Mankind has less impact on the climate than he would think. And ironically, they have everything to do with it. It is could be considered a complex situation, but really, if you just pay attention to that Key of David program, and hopefully some of the things we'll talk about today, you'll find that there are solutions to the weather upsets, there are solutions to the climate problems, but it's not at all what the scientists and politicians would have you believe. So we'll come back to that right after we take a short break.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. What it will be like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Well, thank you for listening today. As you know, we encourage you to send in comments. You can email those to td@kpcg.fm. Let us know what you think about today's program or all the programming, all the material you hear on the Trumpet Daily, all the programming you hear on kpcg.fm. I encourage you, if you haven't, go explore the different programs that we make available online. You'll probably find there's a couple that you're not as familiar with, and they're really fantastic programs. So again, use our website, use all of our facilities. Everything we offer to you is free of charge. We're very excited to see just a lot of traffic on our website. It encourages the writers. It encourages those that put together programming. So send us your feedback and let us know what you think. Well, the overhyped pandemic of COVID, which has been grossly exaggerated by liberal politicians, by scientists, the media. From my perspective, I think it's starting to lose a little steam. They're starting to lose a little of the impact. In fact, the stories that seem to be making the most news are the exceptions now to the fear, the burning of masks, the going out to spring break, the different states that are releasing these mandates. And it just seems that the scientists and the liberal media, they're just really pounding, trying to bring back that fear, trying to worry us all about the consequences of just living a normal life. And at the same time, what I find infuriating, which I'm sure you do too, is the hypocrisy that is on display. It's sickening. And it's not just an obscure official. It's some of the most highly promoted and decorated politicians, scientists, media specialists, that they're the ones that are being exposed in their hypocrisy. And in some ways, it's refreshing to see that. You can think of Governor Cuomo or Dr. Fauci, Governor Newsom, Governor Whitmer, all of them caught in the lies. And in their defense, I mean, it is a new situation, but they're so quick to make these dogmatic statements only to find, you know, days, weeks, maybe even months later, that the data does not support the position that they're promoting. And the data doesn't lie. By their fruits you shall know them. I mean, you just look at how this all really transpires. We are learning a lot about COVID and the impact. And it's just as we said all along, really, and we don't really try to overhype what we say. But if you look at the underlying conditions, there's been reports in the last few days about a huge percentage of COVID fatalities are associated with obesity or heart disease or diabetes. A lot of these health ailments and problems that quite a few people face, but the weakening of our immune systems, the weakening of our overall health, obviously makes us more vulnerable to some of these flu bugs that come around seasonally. Again, I think that you're seeing a loss of momentum for COVID. And so they have to continue with the distraction. There is a fake administration in there that's stumbling and bumbling and doing what they can to make changes. And so there really needs to be a distraction to keep us all scared. And it's time, I think, to return to the age-old distraction of climate change. It's been very costly to the civilized world. And I think you'd find in a lot of ways there is some scientific evidence to support their claims. And there's also a lot of scientific evidence that doesn't make the mainstream media, but it refutes their claims. I hope to share some of that with you here today. I do have several shorter clips, and I want to begin with one. It's a warning from Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft. He, of course, has the Bill Gates Foundation, and he loves to dabble in these human projects that he's just trying to be a savior for humanity. So we'll have clip number two to begin today.
Well, the pandemic will come to an end because these amazing vaccines were invented in a year, and now we're trying to scale them up and adopt them to the variants. But compared to climate change, that's very, very easy. Sadly, climate change will cause far more deaths, over five times as many per year by the end of the century. But it requires innovation across the entire physical economy, changing steel plants, cement plants, electricity, transport. So if we achieve getting to zero, it'll be the most amazing thing humanity has ever done.
Pretty bold statements from Mr. Gates. COVID was pretty easy for us to conquer, even though we're still all alarmed by it. We're still, you know, changing how we react to it. That's easy, according to Mr. Gates, compared to fighting climate change. And to a certain extent, I agree with what he's saying there. But is humanity on the brink of its most amazing efforts, its most amazing solutions that we've ever done? Bill Gates, who dabbles in all of this, he's a nice older man. He's gentle. He's sweater wearing. He's a billionaire, right? He's this calm guy that has all of this money and all the solutions to our problems today. He has obviously been quite involved in the vaccine production and stands to benefit handsomely from that. By the way, he doesn't always have philanthropy as his foundation, at least that's my opinion. And it's already been noted with Bill Gates, and we'll talk about John Kerry and the others, their hypocrisy is they have their own fleet of private aircraft and their super yachts and their different forms of carbon-emitting transportation devices. I don't fault them. They can have that. They can make use of those tools. But what's offensive is to hear their preaching that everybody else has to stop using these things. But their use of these technologies, their use of these carbon-emitting devices, well, that's all justified because they're climate warriors fighting on our behalf. So if Bill Gates is right, humanity's right on the brink of an amazing accomplishment. And what is he talking about? You saw the pictures there. You see the flooding and the damage. What is the threat? What is the real issue? Is it a matter of controlling the weather? Is it a matter of predicting the weather so we can run to higher ground? How are they going to control climate change? like to play for you another clip here from Gerald Fleury. This is the first part of his Key of David program. I'm only going to show you this one clip. I'd encourage you to go back, especially if you're interested in this subject. Go back and watch that program, but we'll show you clip one here.
The British and American peoples, especially the British peoples around the world, along with the American nation, have a variety of views about climate change, and I don't want to talk to you about political views today, except one, and it is a deadly, deceptive view that is going to affect every single one of us if we believe it. There was an ex-U.S. Secretary of State that recently talked about this subject on television, and he said that all of these violent storms that you see around America and the world are caused by climate change. Now, that is just about the most deadliest deception you could possibly hear, and I want to show you why.
So as with other topics that we cover all the time in the Trumpet Magazine, here on the Trumpet Daily, on the Key of David program, we really strive to give you God's perspective. We use the Holy Bible, and we just match that up with the fruits. What do we see in the world? Let's start to look at cause and effect. What are some of the causes of these problems? As the Key of David points out there, Mr. Fleury says that, you know, the scientists and politicians are very unlikely, in fact, they won't turn to the Bible to look for the causes, the solutions. And yet, there are really probably dozens of scriptures that talk to you about God's control over the weather, God's control over climate. You could study Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus chapter 26, the blessings and cursings chapters. And it's interesting how many of those blessings and curses are related to weather and climate. Nahum chapter 1, verse 3 says that God has his way in the whirlwind. You see, God uses weather upsets to draw attention to something. What is it? Is it the fact we have too many cars, that our aircraft are not efficient enough, that we should have never started burning diesel? What is the Bible explanation? Well, God says it has to do with sin. Sin, cause and effect. It takes a Bible scholar to dig into the Bible, or somebody that's interested in the Bible. Let me state it that way. You don't have to be a scholar. You just have to have faith in the Word of God. And ask him, look to the Bible to find out what the problems are. Yes, mankind is breaking laws. We are breaking physical laws, and there are consequences for that. The Key of David program, I guess I am telling you about most of what's in there, but I think he uses a brilliant example, and that is the flood of Noah's day. Gerald Fleury talks about that really the greatest weather upset in the history of man, and that was the flood. And if you study that story, that example is something we teach our children about, but if you go back and read the narrative from the Bible, what you discover is for 100 years, God was warning mankind about the consequences of living the way that they were living. It was sinful. In fact, it describes that time as every thought of every person was on evil continually. It's a paraphrase of what it says there in Genesis chapter 6. But go back and study that. So you find this just uncontrolled sin. And God warns and says, if you don't change your ways, I'm going to have to do something. I'm going to have to correct things. And their sin was so universal and so saturating to the earth that God had to flood the earth. God had to correct and punish. In Job chapter 37 and verse 10, it says, by the breath of God, frost is given, and the breath of the waters is straightened. Also, by watering, he wearies the thick cloud. He scatters the bright cloud. And it is turned round about by his counsels, right? God is controlling the weather that they may do whatsoever he commands them upon the face of the world in the earth. I mean, God has control over the weather. God can move clouds. God can cause clouds to form. And he uses, you know, natural physical laws to do so. It's not just magic. God has laws in place to bring about weather blessings or cursings. Notice verse 13. Says he causes it to come, whether for correction or for his land or for mercy. God uses the climate to correct us. God uses it to water the land, to make it productive and beneficial to us. God can also be merciful and end drought or slow down rain or cool temperatures. God has full control and he uses that control to help. The catch is, I guess if you want to say it's a catch, but God needs us to look to him in faith. God expects us to live by his laws so he can bless us. And he uses physical weather to do so when we don't respond to God, when there's inaction as a warning message is going out. It does, in a way, give God the need to correct. It's his prerogative to do so. And he often uses weather in correcting national or global problems. So to reject God's warning, to somehow believe that we as human beings, we have control over the weather. We do have control over our lifestyles. We can slow down the burning of carbon. There's a lot of different things, or the release of carbon into the atmosphere. The COVID pandemic, excuse me, has been really a great example. We did see a slight reduction in the greenhouse gases, but then what we discovered was that in China, they actually emitted more. And we'll get to that problem here in just a moment. And so you do see that we have an impact. We can control, to a certain extent, some of the chemical makeup of the atmosphere, some of the pollution that maybe is put into the ground or into the oceans. Of course, we have control over that. And of course, that gets back to behavior. And then, of course, behavior gets back to obedience or disobedience. There is cause and effect. There's another example of an Old Testament example, Nimrod, as he and society, again, was getting quite evil and working contrary to God. They didn't want to suffer the consequences of a global flood. And so they used their technology to build a tower so that they couldn't be reached by floodwaters from God. Again, it was their solution to overcoming God's correction. And so God simply just confused their language. God scattered them. You can read that account in Genesis chapter 11. You don't have to get that far into your Bible to find how God uses weather and how God also responds to mankind's effort to circumvent some of that correction that might be coming from God. That Key of David program that we just watched a clip from, taped in 2017, as you heard Mr. Fleury say, he was responding to then Secretary of State John Kerry. And today, he is right back in the fight, the climate fight. He's quite a climate warrior. He works for the fake administration as the climate czar. And he's once again on his soapbox preaching to the world how they're going to have to change all their behavior, except him, of course, and Bill Gates and some of the other wealthy. But he's got the solutions. He, of course, worked with so-called president or fake president Joseph Biden to re-enter or to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. They did that just a few weeks ago. And listen to some of these statements from Mr. Kerry in relation to the Paris Climate Accord. Clip 3, please.
The wild winter weather this week has been called historic and unprecedented. But someday, we may just call this normal.
And obviously, we want to prevent this from becoming the new normal to the degree that we can.
Some people get hung up on the term global warming and say, well, I thought everything's supposed to get warmer. I heard one scientist say this is really global weirding. Is that a better way to think of this?
I think it's a very appropriate way to think of it. It is directly related to the warming, even though your instinct is to say, wait a minute, this is the new ice age. But it's not. It is coming from the global warming, and it threatens all the normal weather patterns.
The planet is warming in large part because of the greenhouse gas emissions we pump into the sky from our power plants, our cars, trains, and planes, and even from raising and growing our food. That warming makes storms stronger, droughts drier, and oceans higher. That means certain places on Earth where people live will become unlivable.
It's really kind of startling if you just watch what they're saying and listen to it. So producing food, generating heat and electricity, taking care of animals, that type of thing, travel, all of that's going to bring about our doom. So I guess we shouldn't grow food, right? You can make as many ludicrous counterpoints to their ludicrous points as you want, and you don't have to go to those extremes, but just think about what some of the things they're saying, right? If we're doing everything wrong, Bill Gates, John Kerry, they have the solutions. They want to teach us how to change. But they're not the only ones speaking out on this. I have a couple quotes here. This one's from the Daily Wire. This is just from a few days ago, and the title of this article is Pope Francis Warns Mankind Faces a Second Great Flood. So the Pope's weighing in on this climate change now. And listen to this. Pope Francis is warning that mankind faces a second flood if political leaders do not address climate change. So the Pope's trying to get the politicians to take on this issue, right? He's a religious leader, and he's trying to work with politicians. Now, in some ways, that'd be great if he'd really address what needs to be addressed. But he's part of the problem. The article continues, in a book released Tuesday, the Pope recounts the story of the biblical flood and says rising temperatures and melting glaciers could cause another. Could cause another flood? Is that what caused the first one? CO2 emissions? Now, he didn't say that directly, but here he, a religious leader, uses the same example as what's used by Gerald Fleury. And did he mention anything about sin? Did he even quote Genesis chapter 6? Does he know what it says there? Was it rising temperatures? Was it melting glaciers? Or was it sin? Religious leaders, religious commentators should stick to religion, should use their Bibles, and look at the fruits. He's not teaching anything about faith. I don't want to just pick on him. I have a quote here from the New York Times. Congress sets sights on climate change in their COVID relief bill. This is from December 2020. And this was with the previous stimulus package, the one that came before the one that's just about to be signed into law by President Biden, or fake President Biden, I should say. And at the time that they wrote this article, President Trump was just about to sign the bill. And they talked about three different measures that are associated with how these politicians, Chuck Schumer, AOC, how they plan to solve our problems. It says all three of these measures will protect our air while keeping costs down for the American people. That was a Senator Barrasso, he's a Republican from Wyoming, and he chairs the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. So he's talking about a reduction in costs. Think about what he's saying, right? All of these measures that they want to spend this money on, what's actually going to reduce our costs. The article concludes by saying the bill also allocates $35 billion for clean energy power from wind, solar, and other sources. So during our recent cold snap, how did that work? Now, again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, right? We've talked about that before, and that was an unusual storm. But if it wasn't for natural gas, if it wasn't for petroleum products, we might still be waiting for those solar panels to clear from snow coverage and the wind turbines to unfreeze. I'm speaking as a fool. Of course, it's warmed up since then. But what do you do if you're relying on all of these technologies that they know there are problems with, they know they're inadequate? So the solution is we'll dump money in there. Bill Gates is happy to dump in his billions, hoping to turn it to tens of billions of dollars. He's an investor. Politicians stand to gain from this. And so you see Congress, you see the Pope not using science, just throwing money and speaking words. One final quote here from The Hill. This is January 2021. And it says, Pentagon declares climate change a national security issue. They listen to this. This is kind of halfway through the article. But it says, the Pentagon, since 2010, has acknowledged that climate change could pose a threat where military operates and its roles and missions. So there could be an issue with climate change, something we need to consider. Well, that changed now. At the start of the article, they're quoting, this is Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. He said, there is little about what the Defense Department does to defend the American people that is not affected by climate change. It is a national security issue, and we must treat it as such. Right? There's a change, another change, away from the previous administration, a change from even the administrations prior to that, that said, okay, let's take a measured, balanced look at the impact of the military on climate change. Well, now it's front and center. Really unusual. The Pope, Congress, the Defense Department, the so-called president, the climate czar, everybody's just telling us all of these threats. They're just stirring up all this controversy. All of these articles are just from the last few days, maybe some dating back into December 2020. But again, you feel the momentum building again toward climate change because, well, COVID, that's becoming old news. You can't scare and control people as much these days, perhaps. Let me remind you of a now famous statement by John Kerry. This is clip 4.
How much time do we still have left to avert climate catastrophe?
Well, the scientists told us 3 years ago we had 12 years to avert the worst consequences of climate crisis. We are now 3 years gone, so we have 9 years left.
9 years left, right? Our inaction or our slow-paced action, the billions that we poured into all of the wind-generating tools that are out there now and solar panels, well, it's all too slow. We have just the briefest window of time, just 9 years left. Now, it's not the first time we've heard that. You're all familiar, hopefully, with the great Al Gore and his declarations. If we'd listened to what he said, well, Miami would be underwater by now. There would be no more Arctic ice. You know, all of these dire predictions. And so much didn't happen. I don't know. Maybe none of it's happened according to his timeline. I'm not exactly sure. Right, there are many before him. When I went to college, I won't say when, it was years ago at University of Colorado. I was into climate. I studied the climate scientists or science, and very interesting technology that they use. It could be used in a very positive way, but back then, all kinds of alarmist talking as well. So why should we believe what John Kerry has to say when they've been wrong all along? The next video clip is, I think, really effective. It shows you what's really been taking place. It's produced by Investors Business Daily, and it's an audio clip. So I'm going to read to you some of the captions in case you're not streaming this. So we'll go with clip 6, please. It says, the world scientists warning to humanity predicted imminent catastrophe back in 1992. Here's how 5 of those predictions have played out. Prediction number 1, the world's fish supply will decline sharply due to dying oceans. Actual results, the per capita supply of fish worldwide rose roughly 30%. Prediction number 2, unchecked population growth will cause more poverty and malnutrition. Actual results, world population has grown, yet the numbers of unnourished people fell 40% globally from 1990 to 2015. And the number of people living in abject poverty fell over 35%. Prediction number 3, air pollution will get worse. Actual result, U.S. air pollution is down since 1992 from every single pollutant the EPA measures. And CO2 emissions are down since mid-1990s, not due to government regulation, but to fracking. Prediction number 4, clean water supplies will run short. Actual results, global supplies of clean water have increased. 1990, 76% of the world's population had reasonable access to drinking water. 2010, 89% had access, according to the UN. Prediction number 5, agricultural land will become less productive. Actual result, land has become far more productive. Since 1990, the share of land devoted to agriculture hasn't budged. Translation, we now feed 34% more people using the same amount of land. What does all this mean? We should view today's global warming predictions with a healthy dose of skepticism. History shows they may be as wrong as those made in the past. They have a picture of Al Gore there. So that's from Investor Business Daily. And they're just looking at the fruits. Measure what is said. Balance that against the fruits, what's actually taking place. I have an article here. This is from NASA, and it was shared on, I think, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration's webpage. This is from February 2021. The title is NASA Vegetation Index. Globe continues rapid greening trend. Sahara alone shrinks 700,000 square kilometers. So this article is talking about, it says, looking at NASA's vegetation index, the news is good. The globe has greened almost 10% so far this century, since 2000. 10% greening. And yet they're telling us all of these threats with 9 years left. As that video showed, we're feeding more people with the same amount of land. There's more access to clean water. There are all of these different results than what was predicted. It says that's good news, this 10% increase, because we know this ultimately means greater crop production. It means greater forest expansion. Ironically, what many experts claim to be a huge problem, CO2, is in fact one of the major reasons behind the greening. It says 10% global greening in just 20 years is amazing. But the article says it's been greening for 30 years. This is not unexpected news to cool-headed climate realists. Vegetation on Earth has been expanding for decades, satellite data shows. Listen to this. The Sahara Desert is shrinking. It's becoming greener. It says they're quoting a study from 2018 that found that the Sahara Desert had shrunk by 8% over the previous three decades. The desert's getting smaller. The area is almost as big. That area, the amount that's changed from desert back to non-desert, I don't know if it's exactly green forest land, but it's not considered desert anymore, but it's so big. It's almost as big as Germany and France combined. So it's shrunk. The desert has shrunk by the size of Germany and France in just the past three decades. It says, so in terms of vegetation, the planet probably hasn't had it this nice in about 1,000 years. Pretty remarkable when you just look at the facts. So even if temperatures are on the rise, that doesn't always mean it's a bad thing. God's creation is wonderfully resilient, as you see from some of those studies. And again, that comes from NASA, from NOAA. Now, those are probably not comments from their chief scientists. It's just other scientists that look at the data that they collect and say, well, wait a minute. I thought the whole Earth was to become a desert and we wouldn't have any fresh water. Well, what's happening? Because if you look at the pictures, it's a different story. You can't lie about the pictures. It looks like I'm running very low on time here, so I'll just try to wrap this portion up. Really, I think it's just the point that I want to make is, just like you are with COVID, just try to look at the facts. Try to get down to the data and analyze what's really going on. Is this yet another fake crisis? Is it a political or a liberal media tool to try to maybe corral us, to alter our behavior, to control our behavior, to put everybody in a mask, to restrict driving and economy and food production? What is really going on? Is this some conspiracy by a certain thinking of humanity? Or are the problems bigger than that? As you watch that Key of David program, you know that these weather upsets, these corrective experiences that humanity goes through can definitely be coming from God as a result of sin. And what's amazing is you see the impact primarily on the developed nations of this world. They're the ones that are causing the problem, according to these scientists. But they're just looking at industry. They're not looking at behavior. And that's the real issue. I have another clip or two that I want to play here. This is more political rhetoric from John Kerry. This is from December 20th, an interview with NBC News about the Paris Climate Accord. Clip 9, please.
Since that deal was signed 5 years ago, we've had the warmest 5 years on record. A new UN report says countries have collectively failed to stop the growth of greenhouse gas emissions. And so the question is, does the Paris Agreement need to be stronger?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. It has to be stronger. And one of my missions on behalf of the president and the country is to help create the dynamic where we're bringing reluctant partners to the table because they see the benefits. I'm confident we can get there. The issue is, are we going to get there in time? That's our race. This is our moonshot.
President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the agreement, saying it cost American jobs.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Kerry calling that a false choice.
What should Americans be prepared to sacrifice in order to meet the president-elect's climate goals?
That's a great question, and I want to make it crystal clear. Moving to address the climate crisis does not mean you have to sacrifice or lose your quality of life. In fact, we will have more jobs and better jobs, better paying jobs.
It's just unbelievable to listen to that. Of course, it's Donald Trump's fault. The real president is just another attack against him. It's another attack against Israel. And you listen to this climate czar, and he's telling us, you don't have to worry about anything. It's all beautiful. No sacrifice, more jobs, more money, right? But we're going to solve all these climate problems. Really, if that was the choice to go to an easier, better way of life, and things would somehow just turn green and cool down and just be all perfect, really, that it's just going to happen? And Donald Trump is the one that set us back? I just want to give you a couple quotes here real quickly. Again, from reputable sources that actually support exactly what Donald Trump said. This is from the BBC, June 2017. It says, Mr. Trump noted the potential or the potentiality of tens of billions of dollars that the U.S. was required to spend on the Green Climate Fund. To date, they say that the U.S. has only spent $1 billion by the time of this article. Mr. Trump complained that other countries had not paid and that the agreement was against American interests. The U.S. has spent more than any other country. However, there is no obligation for countries to pay into that fund. It's all voluntary, right? So the U.S. has to pay all the penalty for everybody. Which countries have pledged the most to this green fund? Well, the United States first, Japan, the United Kingdom, France, Germany. Who's missing? Who's missing from that list? Well, I'll just skip ahead one here. I'll tell you who's missing. China, the world's biggest polluter. India, the third largest polluter. The United States is second, according to these numbers. Russia's number four. Iran's number seven. Saudi Arabia, number eight. South Korea, number nine. None of them are pledging any money to the Green Fund, but they're the ones responsible, according to data, for polluting the atmosphere the most. In fact, if you go do a little research on the Green Climate Fund and the pledges, you'll find, I think, a pretty interesting tale there. There's 22 countries on this list that I have, that the top 22. And if you know anything about the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel, every one of those tribes of Israel are contributing financially to this Green Fund. And who's not? Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and I guess that's probably the main list there. It says, this article concludes, this is globaljustice.org, it's based in Britain. It says, countries from the global north should foot a large part of the bill since they bear the greatest responsibility for causing climate change. Now, actually, they're probably right. It's actually the sins of the people. Just as Old Testament times, God holds his people, Israel, to a higher standard. They have his law. They've had prophets warning them for years, warning about the consequence of breaking his law, the consequence of sin, which ends up in curses. That's what we're seeing. Nobody's talking about that except for this source, the Key of David, the Trumpet Daily, our websites. There are solutions there. God does want to bless. God does want to give us so much more. One final clip to send you away with a discouraging note here, just a little bit more from Mr. Kerry about the fake president, Joe Biden. Clip number 11.
The new climate envoy says there's been too little action and too much hot air.
There is no room for BS anymore. There's no faking it on this one.
So the next thing is for the Biden administration to announce a much more ambitious emissions target. They say they're going to do that by Earth Day in April. And then later this year in Scotland, all the countries that signed the Paris Agreement, they'll get back together and formalize their new targets. The overall goal is to get to net zero emissions by 2050. But Anthony, that is not going to be easy.
No, the clock is ticking, Ben. Thank you very much.
The clock is ticking. We're in so much danger. Well, thankfully we have the fake president and his fake climate czar to stir up the hype, to spend money that we don't have, to penalize the Western nations, to promote those that are actually polluting things. You just look at these problems. As we quoted at the very beginning of today's program in Matthew chapter 24, verses 7 and 8, Christ predicted that there would be, he prophesied that there would be upsets in the weather, in the climate. And he said, that's all just the beginning. It's all a sign that Christ is about to return. He has to. The hypocrisy has to stop. The truth of God has to prevail. God's desire is to bless us, not to curse us. It really gets down to understanding behavior. Well, thanks for joining us today. I'm sorry I ran out of time, didn't get into the Bible study. I hope you have a wonderful day. It's always great to be with you. Have just a fantastic week. Thanks for listening.